This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Vanity Fair.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner, it's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
I am David Canfield. I'm here with Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And this week we have Rachel Handler, features writer at New York Mag Vulture. Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
Coming up, we're going to be doing a wide-ranging discussion of this year's Cannes Film Festival lineup, including two of the most anticipated films of the year, Furiosa, the Mad Max prequel from George Miller, and Horizon, Kevin Costner's sweeping Western saga, which Warner Brothers is releasing this summer. So you both are Cannes veterans, and I am but a Cannes virgin this year. I will be going for the first time. So I will be asking for all of the tips and all of the things. But to start, we should get into the lineup. As mentioned last week, we couldn't really talk that much about it because it came out before the episode went up for us, but after we recorded that fun scheduling hiccup.
Yeah.
I thought we should start with the announcement that came, I think, right as we were recording, Richard, which is Megalopolis. That was the last early announcement before we got the full lineup. For those who don't know, Megalopolis is Francis Ford Coppola's self-financed, $100 million plus budgeted epic that has been the subject of a lot of speculation and a lot of curiosity as the film has come together. I've heard from some people who've seen this film since it's screened a little bit around town, and I can't even describe the reactions, but how are you guys feeling about getting a new Coppola on the Quasette this year?
I mean, the reactions being like, it's crazy, it's not commercial, it's like, so it's perfect for Cannes.
Right.
What I was surprised about is that it's in the competition. I for sure thought it would be like screened out of competition, like just to kind of protect it. But Coppola's like, nope, put me in the, you know, in the main thing, like he did with Apocalypse Now, however many years ago. I'm excited.
I am very excited. I hope that it's like bad,
but in an interesting way.
Right. Yeah. Like Annette style.
Yeah.
Craziness. That's what I go to Cannes for.
Even Aileen style craziness.
I feel like the odds may be in your favor there right now. we'll see. Great cast. A lot unknown about the movie. I believe the two leads are Adam Driver and Giancarlo Esposito. But beyond that, we remain thrillingly in the dark. And beyond that, we've got it's in a competition that feels pretty robust, and we are coming off of a Cannes that fielded three Best Picture nominees, a real signal, I think, of this very international festival's increasing influence on the awards race. So just scrolling through to start, what jumped out to both of you on this lineup?
I mean, I hate to say that it jumped out at me because I'm kind of annoyed that it did, but like, Sebastian Stan playing a young Donald Trump in a movie called The Apprentice about his relationship with Roy Cohn, played by Jeremy Strong. Like, that's a lot of intensity that I probably will ultimately roll my eyes at, but I am very curious about.
That is going to be, no matter what, incredibly interesting. The Jeremy Strong of it all is so perfect. I can't believe they didn't cast him as young Trump.
I mean, I'm surprised they didn't cast him as everything. Yeah. Like, it's just like, let him do it all.
Like,
you
Uncle
know?
Vanya, he's just doing the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, and so the movie was written by Gabriel Sherman, who is a Vanity Fair special contributor, and the director, Ali Abbasi, has a pretty good track record, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Abbasi, he directed a Best Actress Cannes winner a couple years ago in his film Holy Spider. So I think this is a serious drama. I don't think it's trying to be, it's not an Adam McKay movie. It's like, it's an earnest movie that's looking at how this relationship that a young Trump had with Roy Cohn, the notorious lawyer who has also been depicted in Angels in America, how that shaped Trump in a way, or like set him on the path to where he is now. I think that it's an interesting place for the movie to screen. The French or Europeans in general, in my experience, have a sort of funny approach to Trump, which is like a lot of people are like, oh, he's bad, but they're also kind of fascinated by him. And by and large, it's like, I mean, he's not our president, so like we're a little bit less stressed about him. But they also recognize that he can, you know, like if he's back in office, that affects the whole world. So I'm just kind of curious what the political temper surrounding that movie was going to be, because I think if it was premiering in America, people would treat it maybe a lot more radioactively.
But totally.
You know what I mean?
Like, well, I also feel like the French love anyone and anything that has scandalized America.
Yes, yes.
And for them, this is probably like, they're probably pro-Trump at this point.
Or at least pro this movie, let's say. Yeah.
I'm not a Blonde fan, but it does remind me a little bit of that movie premiering in Venice, far, far away from American critics who eventually were all over that movie. Ana de Armas went on to get an Oscar nomination. It's safer ground for something that's inevitably going to stir up far too much discourse for us to wrap our heads around to, you know, have a fair shot at launching and getting a little bit of prestige attention.
My hunch is that if there is anything I'm using in the movie, be it ironic or whatever, that the non-American audience members are going to laugh a lot more.
Yes.
Because they're like, it's silly.
Right,
you know, whereas we're like, oh my God, we have an election coming up. Jesus Christ.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Donald Trump will premiere his movie on the Quasi in 4 years.
Can't wait. Yeah. His
directorial debut.
His megalopolis.
Yeah.
Hopefully that means he's off to better things in 2025.
Right.
The element of this movie that I haven't seen talked about as much that I'm particularly excited by is the one Oscar nominee in this cast is Maria Bakalova, who's playing Ivana Trump. Maria Bakalova was, of course, the hilarious breakout of the Borat sequel, which came out during the pandemic, of course. So lots of asterisks around that release. I think that was a deserved nomination. She's done a lot since then, but I haven't seen her get what seems to me to be more of a showcase part like this one. So I'm excited to see her with a great director, with a really top-tier cast, and playing somebody who certainly lives in the collective imagination.
Yeah, that her casting makes me think it will be more funny than we might think.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But I think between Bakalova, Jeremy Strong, and Sebastian Stan, like, it all feels, I mean, we haven't seen the movie yet, but like, it feels awardsy, where it's like Jeremy Strong, arguably, you know, post Succession, people are like, okay, what's his Oscar role? Mm-hmm. It wasn't the James Gray film that was at Cannes, Armageddon Time, that was at Cannes a couple years ago. So maybe this is it. And playing Roy Cohn, like, Al Pacino, I believe, has won an Emmy for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big role on Broadway in the West End in Angels in America. So, like, I don't know, that feels significant. But also Sebastian Stan, like, he also has a movie this year called A Different Man that was at Sundance, where he plays a man with a severe facial deformity who then has some sort of miracle surgery and becomes, you know, a normal or handsome-looking man. And that's a kind of a big performance, too. So this could be, a significant year for Stan, unless, which is very possible, especially at Cannes, this completely belly flops and everyone's like, what a disaster.
Yeah. You know, like, we can't rule that out.
I feel like it's either like bound for glory or disaster. I don't see a lot of middle ground.
No, yeah. Absolutely not.
We have so far listed two movies that feel very much in that territory. It's worth noting that Sebastian Stan won the Silver Bear for A Different Man, and he's been traveling the festival circuit all year. So he's already in this new art house mode, which I find exciting. It's nice to see him in these riskier projects, for sure.
I just hope he's not doing like an SNL impersonation of Trump. Like, that's what I worry about.
Yeah.
You can't sustain that for a 2-hour, like, serious movie.
Are there prosthetics involved? Probably.
I mean, there is a there is a photo, and it doesn't. It looks kind of normal. It
looks normal.
Yeah,
okay.
Like it's the hair, but yeah. Like other, and, but also it's Trump, and you know, is a younger man, so it's right. He's not like full Trump drag yet.
My
take on the photo is that it looks like Jeremy Strong is doing more than Sebastian Stan, which in retrospect we should not be surprised by, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clarifying in some respects. Yeah. All right, Rachel, I'll go to you for our next movie to talk about.
Oh, well, we were just talking about this. We're very excited for the Demi Moore body horror.
Yes.
Margaret Qualley, Coralie. It's called The Substance. We don't know much about it, but I know that I will probably love it because people are comparing it to Titan, which was like the best thing I've ever seen at Cannes ever.
And one Cannes.
It did.
And won, yes. Yeah. And I'm just excited for her. I feel like it's going to be weird. And I'm we also feel like it'll play at 4 a.m., as Richard said.
Yeah, I don't. And I feel like that maybe not won't get the most premiere screening time.
Right.
Or not. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that there is always, at least in my experience, you know, in years past, I would have seen that on the lineup and been like, oh, that's probably just kind of some weird filler thing, like a Demi Moore horror movie, like not necessary. And then a lot of times in years past, that's been the thing. I'm like, oh, I can't believe I missed that because it's some, you know, remarkable vision or whatever. And people love it. So I'm definitely like scheduling this one, even if like, yes, with all canned things, there's a chance it's a disaster. Mm-hmm. But like, it sounds intriguing.
It does. Yeah.
And, like, if Demi Moore can have a big, like, comeback, so to speak, at Cannes, that would be really exciting.
I feel like she tried. What was she just in? She was
Feud.
On a rant. Yeah. Like, that was sort of a, like, starting.
Yeah, and she's good in that.
Yeah.
She doesn't have any scenes, but,
right.
Like.
And so this is, like, could be her real moment.
Yeah, exactly.
She gets to serve some face. You know, she has fun. I have no idea what to expect from this. We've got Margaret Qualley, Dennis Quaid also in this film. But yeah, again, we're now 3 for 3 with movies that feel very sink or swim. Universal is distributing this. So this is their Cannes play. We mentioned last week a couple Warner Brothers films. Yeah, we shall see. I don't even know what to add to it beyond.
Well, her first movie is great.
The director, yes.
Yeah. Don't know Demi.
Long silence.
No, it's great. Yeah. Revenant, it's just like a very intense. I mean, I have high hopes based on that film.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is it does have pedigree to it. Mm-hmm. Like, not it's separate of the American, you know, names in the movie, like the director, Coralie Farghiat. Her last movie was really well received.
Yeah.
Probably giving her the momentum now to be in main competition. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, like this isn't just some random thing from, you know, like it actually has like backing, like artistic backing behind it, which is exciting.
Yeah. I think. To go in a different direction next, I would love to talk a little bit about David Cronenberg and his new film, The Shrouds, which has been described as his most personal film yet. This is a film that I've heard really good things about in whispers. I'm not sure how much you guys have this one on your radar, what you're excited about, but we've got Vincent Cassel and Diane Kruger in the leads, and it sounds like it's going to be a bit more of a personal movie for him.
Yeah, I love David Cronenberg and everything that he does. And I actually interviewed him last time at Cantla. Was it 2 years ago?
I think it was 2 years ago, yeah.
With
Crimes of the Future.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Which I also really loved. I don't know. I just think it does seem more personal. It's about like his wife's death or him confronting mortality, which is what he loves to do famously in all types of gross ways. I feel very, very excited for this one.
Yeah. I mean, he's a mainstay at Cannes. I mean, they love him there. But Cronenberg, for as much acclaim as he has, doesn't actually have a lot of he doesn't really have much of an awards history.
Mm-hmm. Not much of a footprint at all, really.
Yeah, you know, and, like, that's fine. I mean, he has a remarkable career, separate of any of that. But you're right, you know, like, the idea that this is maybe, you know, a response to a personal tragedy, maybe it's still concerned with death and all that, the kind of gunky stuff that he often talks about in his films, but maybe in a softer way or a more sort of ruminative way. That is intriguing. If it is that, will I miss and will can miss some of the kooky fun Cronenberg? Sure. But, like, I don't know. I welcome a sort of, you know, later career, you know, more earnest drama, if that's indeed what this is.
Yeah, I love weird David Cronenberg, and I'm a fan of most of his movies. But I'm excited by the prospect of him maybe putting something out that expands that audience just a little bit and gets that movie to have a little bit more of a life. You know, if I think of some of the performances that he's directed over the years to a lot of attention, you know, thinking of something like A History of Violence, William Hurt. He has had the ability to, you know, get these movies that are both great and very his style and in that kind of broader mainstream conversation. Master of the Stars was an interesting one because I was not yet going to Cannes when that movie premiered. And I believe Julianne Moore won Best Actress there.
She did.
And then you're reading about her playing, you know, a hysterical actress, and you're like, oh, here we go. Here comes the awards campaign. And then I remember seeing the movie and, you know, Homer Simpson in the bushes slowly backing away from that prediction.
I like Master of the Stars.
Oh, I do too. That is not a criticism of the movie or of Julianne Moore at all.
And she's great in it, but I think that movie, with that performance, they had a problem over there. Like, is this lead actually? Can called it lead, but is it supporting? And then nobody saw that movie stateside. I mean, or very few people did.
Yep.
But that's a good one to bring up because it like Cronenberg does have a good Cannes track record, you know, and if this and also it helps that, you know, The Shrouds has a French actor in it. And, you know, so I don't know. I that could be big. I mean, our colleague Tim Grierson, who he wrote a kind of rundown of the main competition lineup and sort of ranked them and like most likely to win the Palme d'Or. He has that at number one. I mean, predicting Cannes awards is basically impossible because the jury is different every year. So we have no precedent to base it on. But like, you know, Cronenberg's 81. This could be not a last film necessarily, but like it's toward the end of his career probably. And maybe now's the time for him to finally like grab the brass ring.
Another director with some rich Cannes history is Andrea Arnold, who's this may be my personal most anticipated, the film Bird. The best tease I can give for this is that I interviewed Franz Rogowski around the Passages press tour last year. He was filming it at the time. I asked him how it was going, and he described a little bit of how he's starting to relate to birds more and how he feels like an owl. And I asked him to explain how, and he replied by hooting at me. And it was the most confounding, charming interview moment, maybe, of my career. Are you a
bird person? Are you into the bird stuff?
Yes, I think I am an owl.
You're an owl. Explain. Okay. All right.
Perfect.
With that, this movie is called Bird. We have a vague plot description. This film is about a 12-year-old girl named Bailey who lives with her single father, whose name is Bug, and her brother. It's set in North Kent. And all we know is that Bailey starts seeking attention and adventure elsewhere. But this being Andrea Arnold and having actors including Rogowski and Barry Keoghan, there's a lot we don't know, which I find exciting. How do you guys have this one on your radar?
I feel like just the two actors alone, like you get a sense of the exact type of aesthetic that she's going for.
Yeah, it's like, oh, congrats, you made a movie for Film Twitter. Like, yeah.
Well, it also sounds very like Fish Tank to me, just kind of a dark, depressing North Kent tale of a family in dysfunction.
Yeah, it's not the big sweep of American Honey or whatever. Yeah. I mean, those two actors together is really intriguing. The plot description makes it seem like maybe there's a kid who is more the lead, but we'll see. But yeah, Arnold is great. And I think that, you know, Fish Tank sounds like the most apt comparison. And that movie, if people haven't seen that movie, it's really great. It's one of her earlier films, very low to the ground, kind of sort of family drama in a way. I think sometimes I worry that something that's smaller won't pop at a festival like Cannes, but that's not really true when you have like Ken Loach movies winning, you know, like the small stuff can make a lot of noise there. I mean, think about After Sun, you know, which premiered a couple years ago in a small sidebar thing at Cannes and like became one of the big sensations of that festival. And, you know, is a father-daughter thing from the UK. I mean, it's not set in the UK, but you know, so I don't know. I think that like with a name like Arnold's attached, even if it's just two people in a room talking, it'll make noise at a festival it can because they're really invested in her. And, you know, I don't know. I'd like to see her win a Palme d'Or, sure.
Yeah. The thing with Andrea Arnold is I think she's made two brilliant movies that have both gone to Cannes. Since American Honey, she's worked mostly in television, including on the Misbegotten second season of Big Little Lies, in which I believe there was lots of controversy around whether to the extent to which she was even allowed to direct it. I remember hearing about, you know, some interference and, you know, things like that with a lot of big personalities involved in that show. She, of course, had the documentary Cow a few years ago, which was lovely. But I'm so happy to see her behind a big, ambitious feature again. And I really have little doubt that she will deliver. The question is whether enough people will agree with me.
And it's a prequel to Birdman?
Don't spoil the Michael Keaton cameo.
Oh, sorry.
And a sequel to Lady Bird.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Well, Greta Gerwig is the president of the jury this year, so I wonder if she'll have to take herself out for impartiality.
Look, we have to be honest sometimes about, you know, Rachel, you're at New York Magazine Vulture, we're at Vanity Fair. Like, we care about the cinema, of course we do, but we also care about the celebrity of Cannes. And sometimes those things merge, which is great. And I think this year, perhaps it merges most mightily in Emilia Perez, which is this Jacques Audiard film. The lead is an actor named Carla Sofia Gascon, who's Argentinian. But supporting her are Zoe Saldana and Selena Gomez.
Incredible.
And the movie's a musical.
Yes.
Which is like, those things combined, I'm like, well, the red carpet alone.
Yes.
Like, thank God. Like, that's maybe... I think we each get about two posts out of that.
100%. Press conference, a third.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. But, and that's to say nothing of the actual movie.
No.
Yeah.
And it's an Audiard movie. So it is quite a combination of elements here.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, he's a past Palme d'Or winner for Dupin. He's a big deal in France. The movie, you know, it's about, well, I mean, the plot description that we have makes it sound a little dodgy, which is that the head of a Mexican cartel has a sex reassignment surgery to, like, kind of go on the lam, but also to kind of realize who she is. And it's like, that sounds a little bit controversial, which, like, Cannes loves.
Yeah.
But does that always translate to U.S. audiences? I don't know. But the presence of Saldana and Gomez leads me to believe that, like, I feel like their people would sort of scan or audit something to make sure it wasn't, you know, completely offensive.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't think Audiard makes those kind of movies anyway.
No. So, like, but sometimes the French do.
Sure. Or at least they show movies that do. You know, like I'm thinking of that Belgian movie Girl from a few years ago.
Yes,
that, like,
exactly.
Played, like,
won Lucas tons Hunt of film.
Yeah. Won so many awards at Cannes, and then it came to the U.S. and everyone was like, nope.
Yeah, like, absolutely not. Yeah.
But this, I feel like, probably won't be that. I'm very curious about, like, is this the start of a Zoe Saldana Oscar campaign? A Selena Gomez?
A Selena Gomez Oscar campaign?
I mean,
we need it.
You know, like, I feel like somehow it feels like in a year where we're also getting Ariana Grande and Wicked, like, I think we need Selena Gomez kind of there toe-to-toe with her.
They need to be there together on the awards, awards beat, yeah.
I think so.
I'm Chris Murphy.
I'm Richard Lawson.
And I'm Hilary Busis. We are from Vanity Fair's Still Watching podcast. Next up, we're watching the new HBO show, The Regime.
Madam Chancellor, let's keep the gloves on.
This is not a confrontation. We're just saying what's true.
Academy Award winner Kate Winslet is our chancellor as she leads a faux European autocracy in turmoil.
We'll be watching week by week as The Regime unravels.
And we'll be talking to the stars along the way.
New episodes of Still Watching will drop every Sunday after The Regime airs. You know, we are an awards podcast, so it's okay to stay on that track. I mean, Richard Gere has a movie from Paul Schrader that's going to be in the main competition called O Canada, that's from a Russell Banks novel, which Paul Schrader previously adapted Affliction, which won an Oscar for James Coburn.
Yeah. So the book is interesting because it's a very mournful, I believe it was his last novel, Russell Banks, before he passed. It's this very mournful portrait of a documentary filmmaker, very much about aging, and it feels like the kind of role that Gere could sink his teeth into. From what I read, Russell Banks was able to speak with Schrader a little bit about the screenplay before he passed. I believe Joyce Carol Oates has given her seal of approval to the film. I know everyone was very, very eager to hear, hear that. So yeah, it's, you know, Schrader's track record as a writer-director of late has been, in my opinion, very hit and miss, including some pretty brilliant recent movies like First Reform. So
yes,
high hopes. And again, I feel like we've been talking about a few actors now who just being able to see them pop and back in that kind of conversation is exciting. And Cannes is the prime platform for that.
It's probably a help that this is based on something.
Yes.
You know, that this is like, you can't go too far afield.
Absolutely.
Because there's like source material.
But. And it's like another beloved director confronting mortality. A big theme this year.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
Uma Thurman's in it. You know, I love her, like, sort of slow comeback as well.
Between this and Red, White, and Royal Blue, it's...
Oh, my God, yeah.
And she won the Best Actress prize at Cannes last year for Red, White, and Royal Blue.
And then the Oscar.
Yeah. It's really just a remarkable
run. It was a real
run.
Incredible, yeah.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of Uma Thurman on the carpet. Like, that's, you know... maybe she'll go to multiple. You know, sometimes people do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just so they can wear different outfits. And I remember one year, I won't name the actress, but an actress who was on a jury on the jury was asked, well, it's so much time. Why are you doing this? I need a makeup deal. So I have to do all these red cards. I'm trying to get a makeup deal.
That's genius.
And it's like, well, yeah, and it's honest.
And it works.
Yeah.
I'm sure it worked.
Well, that actress has since gone on to great success. So,
oh, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. If Demi Moore and Richard Gere are like the toasts of Cannes.
Yeah.
Does it mean I'm like 12 again?
Yeah, I think that does mean that.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Just create some sort of time vortex. That
Absolutely,
would be nice.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Another film with lots of star power we have not talked about yet is Kinds of Kindness, because Yorgos Lanthimos is, he doesn't like to rest, so we're learning. His film Poor Things won a bunch of Oscars only a month ago. And now he has another very starry, very strange-sounding, I believe anthology-structured film hitting the Quasette this year. And once again, it stars Emma Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's three different stories, right?
Yeah.
That's the idea. Yep. But we don't know if they're like, if it's like they're woven together or if it's like, here's part one, here's part two, here's part three. I don't know. It sounds like kind of like a larky movie. I'm sort of surprised it's in competition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it says it's a three segments. A man without choice who takes control of his life. A policeman who's alarmed that his wife, who is missing at sea, has returned. And a woman who's determined to find a specific someone destined to become a spiritual leader. So
okay.
I heard that this was quote unquote hostile.
Hostile.
I've heard similar descriptions. It's also just under 3 hours.
I think just kind of an aggressive film.
Like a
probably more like his earlier work than like Poor Things. But yeah,
I was going to say like. Yorgos's awards track record of late, there's been a kind of ticking clock on when is he going to get actually really like Yorgos level weird again? Because that seemed to be the rumor around Poor Things, which is a very weird movie, but obviously was widely embraced both as a box office hit, as a 5-time Oscar winner. It did extremely well. This one may be the one from what I'm hearing. Again, only in whispers. I don't know much about it. It's an amazing cast. In addition to Stone, you also have Willem Dafoe back in the company. We've got Margaret Qualley, who had a smaller role in Poor Things. Again, she's also in another film at Cannes this year. I'm very excited to see Jesse Plemons and Hong Chau do the Yorgos thing. And Hunter Schafer, I think she said she's in one scene or film for one day or something like that.
Yeah, and I think the important thing to note about like the Lanthimos of it all is that like Poor Things and The Favorite are written by Tony McNamara, so there's a huge different voice in those movies, whereas, you know, you think of early Lanthimos films like Dogtooth or Alps, those were written by Lanthimos and Efthymis Philippou, who's like the guy who writes a lot of his, or used to write a lot of his movies. So this is like going back to the Lanthimos that first put him on the map and gave him the opportunity to make those Oscar-y movies. And I don't want to call this a retreat, but it's a return.
Yes.
And I think it'll be interesting to see if a lot of the sort of newer fans that he's collected with these past two like very Oscar-y movies, how they react to who, you know, people who've been watching his career for a long time kind of think of him as, you know.
Right.
It's like, I remember going to see Killing of a Sacred Deer at Cannes and being like, well, this person hates the world, you know? And I don't think that mindset, dark as they are, is reflected in Poor Things or The Favorite.
No,
you know, there's
not.
Almost a sentiment. I mean, there certainly is in Poor Things, a sentiment to those films, whereas some of his earlier stuff is just bleak.
Oh, my God, yeah. And now he's like, actually, I still hate the world. You thought I didn't,
but I
do.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that the word kindness is in that title, but like,
feels ironic. feels ironic.
Yeah.
The
original
title was "And," if I'm correct.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and then someone was like, well, "You cannot do that because that is completely un-Googleable.
You will break Google."
yeah. But I mean, look, you know, we haven't had a Haneke movie in a long, long time. So if Lanthimos wants to slot in there, you know, he's gotten his awards glory. I mean, he hasn't himself won yet, but like, and be the dark kind of provocateur who's a big name at the festival. Great, I welcome it.
It's important to be reminded of extreme brutality while it can, at least once.
Right. I mean, if the experience itself, I mean, it's such torture being there, you know, in the south of France, worrying about getting a
That's
ticket.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's important to confront human nature and all of its varietals.
That's why I'm going.
And to have a finger pointed at us in the audience for being complicit pigs, you know.
That goes without saying. That's like every movie.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Can't wait. Next, we're going to talk about the two premieres we mentioned last week, the two Warner Brothers films that are both premiering out of competition. One is Furiosa, and all eyes are on that one because Mad Max Fury Road had a very storied run from its Cannes premiere, and this is George Miller's anticipated follow-up with Anya Taylor-Joy.
She's from a place of abundance. This is our destiny.
My childhood. My mother. I want them back.
I want them back!
And then there's Kevin Costner's Horizon.
Oh, yeah.
Which, part one, sorry.
Part one.
Yep.
These people think that if they're tough enough, smart enough, and mean enough, all this will be there someday. There's no army off this earth that's gonna stop those wagons coming, little as they're wanted.
And I'm hoping there's a Cannes sneak of part two and we just spend 6 hours in Kevin Costner's American West.
Wow. If only.
I just can't wait to hear what the French have to say about
that. Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe they allowed this.
Well, I'm surprised that Costner wanted to do it in a way. You know, out of competition makes sense, obviously. Yeah. But, like, it's like, do you really want that exposure?
Yeah.
Like, you know, just...
You want that heat?
Also, do you want to be, like, so associated with something so frou-frou as Cannes?
Right,
like,
right.
You know,
like the opposite
this
of
is an American
ethos.
Saga. Yeah.
That's what I hope he's asked at the press conference. You know you're doing a really frou-frou thing, Kevin.
Yeah. This is kind of girly.
Doesn't this seem kind of Lily? I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, this is highlights of the lineup. There are other films that I'm sure will pop. I don't know that many of us would have called out Anatomy of a Fall last year, which, of course, went on to win the Palm and win an Oscar and have quite a life. We're super excited. We also had a listener, Louisa, who asked us to note the film Motel Destino, which comes from the director of, I think it was just last year at Cannes, Firebrand, with Jude Law, which is being released later this year. Pause for chuckles.
Sorry.
I might have made a face in the studio with
please.
Rachel.
No, please. I mean, listen, we're objective here,
I'll
right?
I'll sip my water.
This film is written, though, by Mauricio Zacharias, who is the great screenwriting partner of Ira Sachs and has written some beautiful films of late. So that gives me a little bit more hope for it.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious about that. We didn't mention a lot of the non-English language titles, partly because there aren't a ton of plot descriptions for those out there.
Right.
But there is a Jia Zhangke movie, the Chinese director who's so good, working with his wife again, Xiao Tao, who's a great actress. Like, I'm excited for that. You know, the chances are that everything we've talked about will not win the Palme d'Or, by the way. Like, because there's always stuff lurking that, you know, you have to kind of discover on the ground there because there's just not the press materials for it yet, but...
I'm hoping my presence, Richard, will at least change your luck of not seeing the Palme d'Or winner again.
Yeah, I have a really bad track record with that. Really bad.
Well, I'm intrigued by the Chiara Mastroianni, Marcello Mastroianni. I think she's playing her father in a movie.
Yeah.
That could be absolutely insane in a great way, or...
Yeah, that's called Marcello Mio.
Yeah, Marcello Mio, yep.
Catherine Deneuve's in it.
And Christophe Honoré directed it. He's a director I really like. He makes, like, really interesting, talky kind of gay dramas. This is not that. This is something else. Which
as far as you know. You know.
As far as I know. Maybe the talky gay drama will be me meeting him. And, you know, I don't know.
What will Kevin Costner have to say about that movie as well?
But yeah, I'm intrigued about that. I mean, that's the thing is, like, there are people like Honoré who've, like, been at Cannes many, many times and, like, have never gotten, you know, toward, you know, sort of in the awards conversation, but, like, they keep getting invited back. And so, you know, every year you're like, is this their year? Maybe maybe this is Honoré's year. Who knows?
Yes, we shall see. So zooming out a little bit for the two of you who have been going to Cannes for a number of years, what is your take on this lineup overall, big picture? How does it feel compared to last year? What's your read on the festival's evolution over the last few years?
It's more robust than I expected, yeah. I think. You know, I had heard rumors that it was going to be a very Eurocentric lineup, that there weren't going to be a ton of English language things, which, you know, is fine for the festival. It's just maybe not great news for our coverage as, you know, US-based publications. So that was a relief that there are these kind of, you know, narratives all the way from, you know, from Demi Moore to Selena Gomez to whatever.
Yeah.
The movies themselves also sound intriguing. And, you know, with Furiosa and a Kevin Costner Western, it's like, so the strikes didn't even really, like I was worried that, you know, the big commercial plays at Cannes wouldn't be there because they just, those movies weren't ready in time. But, like, you know, Furiosa was not an American production, and Horizon, you know, is a documentary about Kevin Costner's life. Uh-huh. And so, you know, there was no union rules about that. So anyway, I just think it's like, I'm surprised by, like, how deep the roster is.
I feel the same way. Yeah, yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. And they'll probably add things too.
Yeah, they'll add things, and then there'll be discoveries. I mean, I'm hoping for an After Sun or you know, or whatever else, you know, kind of pops out of one of the sidebar categories. We haven't got into in certain regard on this episode because there's just a lot to talk about. And compared to a couple years past, I'm feeling like, oh, I really don't have time to see everything.
I know. I always feel that way. It's
yeah,
very...
Yeah. But usually it's like, well, here's the obvious 10 movies I need to see. And now it's like, it's kind of like, there's like an obvious 20 movies I have to see. And
I agree.
A little daunting.
Overwhelming. Yeah.
And that's in addition to those After Suns that you don't even have on your radar.
Exactly.
Right.
And then you have to make time
coming
for...
out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So now is the time when you have to start kind of listening to publicists you trust who are like, no, I swear this one is actually,
right.
Or, you know, yeah.
Exactly.
Unlike, you know, later fall festivals particularly, this is also where a lot of distributors are looking at their big mm-hmm. fall releases. And, you know, Netflix does not go to Cannes with their own movies, but they are certainly on the ground. Last year they bought May December out of the festival for giving that movie a hell of a run, deserved more in the end, but they certainly put their might behind it, in addition to a lot of other studios. I'm definitely watching for Neon. We've talked about their kind of insane track record of winning the Palm for several years in a row. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's quite a few. And this year, Neon has the film Anora, which is one we haven't talked about yet. It is from one of the more exciting American filmmakers working right now, Sean Baker, whose last movie, Red Rocket, starred Simon Rex. We talked about Simon Rex a little bit on the pod mm-hmm. when that movie released. And this stars Mikey Madison. And anyone who has seen Better Things, the Pamela Adlon FX series, should know Mikey Madison is a ferocious talent. So I'm pretty excited for this.
And I love that show. Yeah. I'm so excited for this one.
Yeah, and Baker, you know, has a great touch with both, you know, so-called non-professional actors, as we saw in, like, Tangerine or The Florida Project. I mean, obviously, Willem Dafoe is a professional actor, but a lot of the other people in that movie weren't. And then, you know, with Red Rocket, it was like, okay, here's this guy who's, like, been around, like, had a weird career. I want to put him as the lead in something, and it paid off really well. I mean, Simon Rex is genuinely great in that movie. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with Mikey Madison, who is a younger actor, but, like, very much on the rise.
Yeah.
Baker's not swooping in to, like, kind of revive anything.
No.
He's kind of pushing her along. And so I'm curious to see how those two energies kind of work off of each other.
I would love a Mikey Madison versus Demi Moore best actress battle. That's the can I want.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we could kind of speculate about what jury president Greta Gerwig is going to kind of be into, you know. I think that can be kind of a fool's errand because a lot of times the movie that I think a jury is based on who's in it is going to go for, they go for the complete opposite. But I don't know. Like, in this lineup, it feels like, I feel like Gerwig would go for a Sean Baker movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel like she would love, like, the Cronenberg.
Yeah. Yeah.
She'd probably been to the Paul Schrader. I feel like she's a Criterion head.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She would
big
love
time.
Marcello Mastroianni's daughter or granddaughter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, she'd be into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that feels, in one way or another, up her alley. Or she'll just violate all the rules and give the prize to Kevin Costner.
Will she be immune to the powers of Francis Ford Coppola and Noah Baumbach's frequent collaborator, Adam Driver, is my question.
Oh.
That's a great question. You know, I think on the episode we did in March where, you know, we predicted, like, we talked about the movies to come for 2024. We, you know, sort of make wild predictions for Best Picture. I think I went with Megalopolis because I was like, okay, here it is. It premieres at Cannes. It gets rave reviews. And then, you know, blah, blah, blah.
That was the exact trajectory you outlined.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that that happens solely so I can be proven right. But no, but I think there is a chance, despite the fact that Megalopolis has something of a burgeoning bad reputation based on these sort of industry screenings that have happened largely in LA. I think that movie could surprise us, and maybe Greta Gerwig just can't resist having that moment of like, not only did it surprise the critics and actually was good, but here it won the Palme d'Or. You know, 20 or what would it be? 45 years after Apocalypse Now premiered it.
Oh, good, yeah. Good quick math. Yeah. Wow.
I never fully trust great artists' tastes, by which I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you picked a movie I didn't love. We just can't know for sure. I remember last year when Ruben Östlund was heading the jury and we were all kind of like, you know, back in our seats, like, oh, mm-hmm. God, what is he going to do? And he picked Anatomy of a Fall. They went with Anatomy of a Fall at one and Zone of Interest as the runner-up. And those really were the choices. He's kind of nailed it. So who's to say if Greta Gerwig will go in a wild direction that we cannot expect?
And maybe she'll just do it much more democratically and listen to her fellow jury members. Because it's my understanding that the jury president can kind of just, like, make a decision. Like,
oh,
I,
really?
I think the other jury members are there to consult. And you're like, and most jury presidents are like, no, this is a democratically yeah. done thing. And that's why you get – I mean, that's the rumor about why – in the BPM year, and mm-hmm. Almodovar was the jury president. It ended up going to the Square, right? The Östlund film, and it was sort of said to be something of a compromise because Almodovar really wanted BPM, but like other people in the jury were like a little bit less cool, you know, hot on that one, and so they were like, okay, what do we all agree on, you know? But in other years, I think the president is just like, no, thank you for your input, but. It's like RuPaul.
So what you're saying is that when Greta Gerwig bangs her gavel and says, I vote for the Trump movie, that The Apprentice is winning the Palme d'Or.
Yeah. And the Palme d'Or just says the Trump movie. It's not.
Yeah.
And Sebastian accepts in character.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Can't wait.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
Well, should we make some predictions, guys?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Rachel, what's winning the Palme d'Or?
Oh, God. This is actually so not my expertise at all. So I'm just going to pick what I want to win the Palme d'Or.
That can often be the best route.
And I want David Cronenberg. I want him to win.
You stole mine. That was mine.
I just love him and I want that for him. And I feel like, you know, he's getting up there and in age and... How many more movies does he have left?
And how many Canadians have won that award? Not many,
not
I don't
many.
Think.
Not many. I'll have to look into that. Yeah.
It feels like if the movie delivers, everything is there for that to happen.
Yeah.
The narratives are very aligned. The story is lovely. You've got actors who are so known at Cannes, a director who is iconic to the festival circuit. So I that would also be my prediction, and I can see it happening.
Hmm.
So my prediction is that the Gerwig-led jury decides to go further afield and something about Caught by the Tides, which is the Jia Zhangke movie, really strikes a chord with them. It's a big deal. Chinese director wins the Palme d'Or. And then it gets like a small U.S. release and like
gets an Oscar.
Yeah, exactly. that's what I'm going to – I think that maybe out of some self-consciousness, they'll not want to give it to an English language movie.
Mm.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It has been an interesting few years in that regard. You know, you had something like Triangle of Sadness, but Ruben Östlund, very much not an American filmmaker. We have not had an American filmmaker win the Palm since, I believe, Terrence Malick for The Tree of Life, which was over a decade ago. So because the Cronenberg was already selected, I'm just going to throw out Sean Baker. Okay. And I'm going to go with the neon math and see if the combination of a Mikey Madison star turn, beloved American indie film director, taking that next step, and Greta Gerwig on the jury is the lucky combination. And neon, of course, is the lucky combination for that movie.
That would be exciting.
So my last question for the two of you is a selfish one. As mentioned, I'm going to Cannes for the first time. We also have a lot of listeners who've never been to Cannes. So what about the festival should I be on the lookout for that I am not on the lookout for? What's your insider view of the Quasette that people might not know if they haven't been?
I mean, be nice to the young women with the iPads outside parties.
And they won't be nice to you.
But you must be nice to them.
They hold all the power.
I think the thing is that, like, as regimented as the festival can seem from a distance or even up close, where you're like, okay, these are the big things I have to see, or if you're watching, you know, from at home, like, these are the things I should be paying attention to, is that, like, have a sort of flexible mindset about it because, like, as we've said, like, a lot of times the big breakout is nowhere on, you know, certainly my radar, you know, a very America-focused radar, you know, and I think that Cannes can seem a little stiff and formal, but actually kind of underneath that is it's all pretty like molten right now. You know, we don't really know what's going to play. Sometimes big movies just kind of fall flat and then you have to kind of turn your attention elsewhere. So I think it's kind of just sort of keep an open mind, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Be open to total chaos.
Yes, total chaos for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll tell you the secret good beach place to go.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. I'm ready for chaos, beach, and women with iPads. Well, that does it for this week's show. We'll, of course, be talking much more about Cannes over the next month. The festival runs from May 14th to 25th. But until then, we will leave it at that. I am David Canfield at DavidCanfield97. Richard, where can folks find you on the internet?
Rylaws.
And Rachel, where can they find you in addition to in New York Magazine and on Vulture?
I'm at Rachel_Handler.
Our editor and producer is Brett Fuchs, and this week's award for the number one question to ask of any Cannes film goes to Rachel Handler.
Are there prosthetics involved?
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.